You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 701. And boy, does it feel good to say that, man. I'm here with co-head editor M. Moore. M. Moore, how does 701 feel as opposed to 699.999999, whatever? How did that feel?
It feels good, but it feels weird, you know, because we've been doing the 6.9999 for so long. So it's just like, is it real? Did episode 700 really happen?
We did, like, honestly, and this is all my... This is all my fault. I've just been busy. Is we did almost 20 699s. So really, we're almost up to 750. And that's my fault. And I'll try not to have it happen again. But listen, man, I mean, we don't get paid for doing this. You know, I got a day job and I sell records and I design album covers. So, and I got a social life. So listen, man, and I throw shows. So F you, man. You don't like it too bad. No, but honestly, I would like to do better with regard to that. And I would like to do more tracks, play more music, but tonight's going to be a freestyle because I'm going to be slammed all November. It's only November 5. I'm already slammed. Anyways, no one wants to care about how busy here, about how busy I am. Let's revel in 600 a little bit, Pam. Yes. Here's some email. You can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. This is from Tim. 700 episodes. That is amazing. I've been listening since episode 372. Keep it up and thanks for the years of entertainment. This is from Mary. Episode 700 was crazy and crazy long. I don't want every episode to be that long, but it was great for such a milestone. I literally listened to it for 5 days to get through it. And that's from Mary. Here's from Jason. Congrats on 700. I jumped around the episode because I can't sit and listen to 5 hours. What an accomplishment. I love listening almost every week from Jason. This is from Ren, R-E-N. Get back to the news. And I got to actually open my I got a personal, a nice, real nice personal email here too. From somebody, and I'm going to read it in a second. And you can always use that podcast at punknews.org, but I definitely want to read this person's email if I can find it. Here it is. This is from David. Hi, I'm only writing to say how much I enjoyed this monumental episode. For me, 95% of podcasts go in one ear and out the other pretty quick. Of the other 5% that I enjoy, Punk News is my favorite. Thanks for all you guys do. Sincerely, David from Victoria, Canada. P.S. I caught the Guar show with Helmet and the Dwarves last week in Vancouver, and it was phenomenal. I think you will agree when it hits your city. I'm sure I will, and I will be at that show at the end of this month, which I'm really looking forward to. Em, I forward you. Let's brag for a hot second. First of all, Em, how does it feel now that we've accomplished 700? I would say, and I'm going to, you know, I always pat ourselves on the back. I would say that 700, the guests and the quality of interviews, I would say met the requirement of a monumental episode like number 700. I think we at least were competent with regards to episode 700. I think we made at least a big enough impact for the episode number.
Oh, I definitely agree with that. Yeah, we had lots of awesome guests and all of the interviews were a lot of fun. You know, either being a part of it or just kind of listening, like they were all really good. And we had lots of great folks. I'm glad everyone was able to show up and, you know, or I think we only had like one no-show or something, one or two.
I think we had one, maybe it was two no-shows. Not that many. Yeah, pretty good ratio for the big numbers. All the interviews were fun. I'm thinking of some of my favorites. Penny Rimbaud was one of my favorites just because he's so Penny Rimbaud. Harley Flanagan was one of my favorites because I'm like, yeah, CBGBs. Well, how was that? And then he starts talking about like childhood trauma and being molested and stuff. I'm like, ah.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh man, I got to get out of this for 700. You know, Harley really is the man. I mean, Harley is friggin' awesome. Great interview subject, amazing musician. And I love having him on the show. Let me see who else we had. Oh, we had Blag of the Dwarves, which was cool. Blag's always a great interviewee. Let's see here. We had the Melvins were great. Red Cross was great. Spike was great. Everybody. Everybody was great. CJ was cool. Julia was cool. I love the reading between the lines with Julia and Coat Hanger's Future. You know what I mean? They're all being very mum. You know, very mum. You know. And what was some of your favorite moments or one or two of your favorite interviews? You did a great job interviewing Greg of Husker Du, great job interviewing Bratmobile, great job interviewing Roddy Bottom, who's going to be the bonus 700, which is going to post relatively soon. Also, I felt bad that Janiak Jr. got cut off pretty quickly. And if you want, you can have them on the podcast for like a full thing because they were only on for like four or five minutes. I felt bad because we were time crunching. And actually, I didn't communicate this. So you could have pushed it like five more minutes. If the listeners don't know, anytime we do a 500 or 600. We're always fighting the clock, and that's kind of part of the fun, but actually maybe it's not. It's like very stressful. And that like everyone's got 10 minutes and everyone is always talking 12 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever. So Janiak Jr. being a good sport, like signed off after like 5 minutes. I thought, man, he got like a real short time. So, if you want to have him on for a full episode, you probably should if you want to.
Definitely will. So, yeah. No, he has a lot of stuff with like he was a YouTuber for like quite a while, and I think his podcast is still running. But yeah, like he'd be a great guest to do, like come on, do a little interview and then talk about some news stuff. So that will definitely be happening in the future.
We should ask him and tell him to be real about how he felt to get kicked off after like 6 minutes or 5 minutes.
I was trying to be like get a lot of information in because I told him earlier, I'm like, it's gonna be so quick, you know, like we're gonna try to, you know, do everything. So I'm really, really glad that he was on and was cool with it. But yeah, like we'll definitely have him on for a longer episode. Watching the clock was was something with everybody, because it's like, again, all of them, you want to keep talking, right? Like you want to just like, oh, I want to get into this and I want to get into that, and you know, time just goes so fast. But yeah, no, all of the interviews were so much fun. I love the Roddy Bottom interview. I'm really excited for that to be up soon. So keep your ears peeled. The Janiak Jr. interview is great. Jay's awesome. Bratmobile's a lot of fun too. And Greg from Husker Du was just wild. So that was a lot of fun. We didn't have any like bad interviews. They were all great. Everybody showed up and showed up really well. I liked Dom Davi too. He was a lot of fun.
Dom was great. I'm like, so is Tsunami Bomb over? And he's like, maybe. I'm like, oh, I did not expect that answer.
Yeah, like who knows? So that was really cool. I also really liked having Adam back on.
Yes.
Because it was like everybody just like, it was like a family reunion, you know, almost. It was so nice.
What was funny with Adam, like, this is so weird. But like to me, it didn't feel weird at all. I felt like he was on a podcast like 2 months ago, you know.
Like no time had passed, right? And it's just like, you know, everyone's back. So that was one of my favorite moments for sure. It was all great though. I think we all worked together really well, and it was nice, you know, having you there and Sam there and everybody just doing their thing and coming together really well. It was very harmonious. It was awesome.
Well, there you have it. Check out. Oh, one other thing, and let's pat ourselves on the back. We got an email compliment from a certain somebody, which I shouldn't like.
Oh, yes.
Rockers, we shouldn't care about getting compliments from quote famous people or whatever. But that was pretty cool, Em.
That was really cool. That was also like just an awesome interview. Well,
tell them who we got an email compliment from.
Ooh, wait, do I give them hints or do I just come out and say it?
Give them three. I mean, because they can't respond because this is pre-recorded. Oh, or whatever. So give them three hints, then tell them. We'll play. You listeners at home can play this game. M, give them three hints, starting from most broad to most specific.
Okay, most broad. This person played in a punk band.
Who could it be?
It could be anybody. Second hint. This person is from the UK.
Well, that narrows it down some.
A little bit. And number three, it's all love all the time.
Oh, so kind of hippie-ish, you're saying?
A little hippie-ish.
And could it be the last of the hippies, Mr. Penny Rimbaud?
It could be. It could easily be. I think it is.
And what if you like to get a compliment from Penny Rimbaud? See, I thought actually he was kind of annoyed by the interview. And obviously, like English people are always super polite anyway, so maybe he was. But what was it like to get a compliment from Penny Rimbaud, Em?
It was really nice. It was just like, oh, good, you had a nice time.
Penny's a man. I mean, he's weird.
I'm glad.
He's weird, and I love that he's weird. But it is so cool. You know, so many punk rockers, and you can't blame people. So many punk rockers, like, aren't who you think they are or aren't who they appear to be on stage. And you can't blame people. People got life going on and this and that, you know. Although some people are just straight up hypocrites or whatever, you know. But it is so cool when you deal with or meet somebody that is the real friggin' deal. And Penny Rimbaud is the real friggin' deal. He really is the guy on the record. He is the guy in interviews. Like, that's him. He's Penny Rimbaud. So that was pretty cool. So I'm honestly real glad he was the headliner, you know. And that was great. I'm like, Penny, you're a hero. How does that feel? He's like, I hate that word. Anyways, so this is a Punk News podcast number 700. We're rolling along. I'm going to try to be better about uploading stuff. We actually have a bunch in the backlog, but I'm going to post this tonight just to get things kicked off again. I think I had one other thing that I wanted to – oh, well, Philly Record Freak Out in the Chamonix Creek, November 16, then December 6 in Philadelphia. So we got that going on. And so I think those are the main things happening at Punk News. End of year list are coming up, but we're not going to talk about that tonight because we've got a lot of other stuff to talk about. And so let's see here. There was something I wanted to talk about that we briefly talked about before the start of the episode. But what was that? I don't want to name bands, but was it how to treat interviews when we don't get interviews from buzz bands? Was that what I wanted to talk about?
That was I believe so.
I don't know why I thought that was so interesting to talk about. Well, I'll just talk about this briefly. When Emma and I were talking, I was thinking it was interesting, but now I don't feel like it's that interesting of a topic, so I'll just blow through. There's a couple of buzz bands, and this is – oh, actually, I meant to segue this in. You know, sometimes I get a little boo-hoo-hoo, you know, this buzz band won't do an interview with us, even though we did an interview with them before they blew up, or two or three interviews, you know, boo-hoo-hoo. But then freaking Penny Rimbaud was on episode 700. Jello was on episode 500. Yes. 600. Daryl Hall was on episode 500. You know, the Dwarves, the Melvins, Red Cross, Bratmore. What do we care if some buzz band doesn't want to do an interview and we got Penny Rimbaud on our podcast? I mean, who cares?
Exactly.
I do care a little bit, but, you know, when you put it in context, I don't care as much. I'll mention this briefly is there are two buzz bands. One, the buzz, I think, might be kind of burning away. And the other, we'll see what happens. One's a little bit newer than the other, where we did interviews with them early on, and they were great interviews, and we had a great time. And then they kind of blow up and sign to maybe a little bit of a bigger label, and they get the cool PR person, you know. And so we say, hey, you know, do they want to come on the podcast and do an interview? Because, you know, we've been with them since the start. We love them. And the PR person is never like, no. You know, by contrast, I do appreciate this. The Rolling Stones are putting out a box set, and I emailed the guy. I'm like, hey, does Ron Wood want to do an interview? And he's like, thanks, but probably not. So I'm like, which I thought was cool, a cool answer, you know. But kind of these cool PR people, they're always like, oh, they're real busy right now. And you're like, you can't give us 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And I get annoyed by that. But on one hand, I try never to take it out in the band because at that level, it really isn't the band calling the shots. Now, if the band was aware of the offer, they might say, oh, I want to do it or I don't want to do it, you know. But that it never makes it to the band because we have to get through the, quote, cool PR person first. So it never gets to them, you know. So I try not to take out in the band, but I get annoyed by the PR person. But here's the question, though, Em. Yes. Is the PR person and the label – They're not exacting vengeance against Punk News if they don't give us an interview. The fact of the matter is PR people have no or almost no, what's what I'm looking for, principles. And I don't mean that in a negative context. Is a PR person doesn't stand for anything. They'll do whatever to get the best result. You know, where like say a certain band might not sign with a certain label or whatever because they don't like the label or they think they're creeps or whatever. There's a principle there. A PR person has almost no principle, and that's a PR person's job is to get the best result for the band. And so a not uncommon philosophy is they'll limit the number of interviews, which I understand, but they won't do interviews with certain publications because they want to attach a certain chic or a certain aesthetic to the band, you know. And I'm fully aware that Punk News is kind of dorky, kind of nerdy, kind of silly, kind of wacky, and that's Punk News. And And I'm proud of that because the fact of the matter is, A, we're the longest running punk website there is. B, there actually are very few punk websites left. C, we're not too cool to have a barrier like Maximum Rock and Roll or whatever. Like, we have no gate to get into Punk News. We'll cover anything. If you say you're punk, we'll cover you. And even if you don't say you're punk, we'll probably cover you. You know what I mean?
As long as you're cool.
So even if you're not cool, I'll cover you. I mean, if it's news, I'll cover if you're not cool, you know? I'll even interview a not cool person if I think the interview would be interesting and you know, but that's harder to do in 2025. Anyways, so the downside of that is cool PR people might not let their clients do bring an interview to their clients with Punk News, where they might bring it if it's Stereo Gum or Brooklyn vegan who are quote cooler, you know. And so the question is then, do we have a right to be mad at the PR person about that? Do we have a right to be mad at the band about that? You see, because on one hand, you know, we've been cool to the band and we're kind of getting stabbed in the back. And I'll point out that not all PR people do this. And the fact that matters, Em, I'm thinking of a couple PR people that have long, long running acts that have been able to subsist and make a living, not being huge, but being medium, tend to do interviews with us, you know, people that know what they're doing, whereas it's the buzzy bands that sometimes don't. So the question is, Em, with the buzzy bands, should we be mad at them for kind of turning their backs on us or the PR people? Or should we say, well, I understand it's a quote business and they're trying to go to the next level and they believe that going to the next level requires a certain aesthetic. Although I will say, Em, I've yet to really see that strategy really pay off, honestly. Can you think of an instance where a buzzy band became buzzy, kind of shut off certain avenues that it used to be open to, and then exploded? I can think of one. I can think of one, actually. I can think of one. And that's it. So anyways, Em, what's your opinion? Should we be mad at the PR person? And then I've got a third option, too.
Okay. Do I get the third option now, or do I answer the two?
You answer the two, then I'll give you the third option.
Okay. I don't think... Well, first of all, being mad or being angry at the band, no way. Because like you said earlier, like they might not know, like there's all this other stuff going on. So like, no, never mad at the band or the artist or whatever. With the PR people, again, like there's so many great ones. Like I feel like sometimes we spend time like just being like all the, you know, there's,
see, I feel like
ones.
There's not so many great ones. I feel like I feel like maybe the slight majority are shitty. Ones. There are some great ones, but I feel that the slight majority are kind of shitty. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, but like, you know, there's a lot of awesome people we work with and whatever, and they're lovely, and this isn't about them. But there are certain things that do like get under my skin with that, because it's like, we've helped you and we want to continue to help you, you know, like, and it's always that thing of like, if the bubble bursts, who's going to be there? You know, we're the ones that are going to be there. It's not going to be like these big publications all the time, you know, like I really respect, there's a lot of PR people and a lot of bands that I've dealt with that I really, really respect, because they treat every publication as equal and they don't treat one better than the others. You know what I mean? It's like, this is press, this is good, this person or these people are really good at what they do and I want to work with them. And I'm going to give them the respect and the, the opportunities that I feel like they deserve, kind of regardless of where they're writing or whatever. I lose a lot of respect for people when they treat different publications differently. And by that, I just mean not like based on, or I mean, you know, based on the size of the publication, not necessarily, you know, anything else, where it's like, oh, this one's like super popular, so it must be like really, really good. And this one's like not as popular, so it must like really suck. And we're not going to deal with that one, even though, you know, that one's putting out a lot more stuff and a lot higher quality, you know, it just, I think that certain PR people have a hierarchy of publications, and I think that's complete bullshit. Long story short.
Well, there's M's very concrete opinion, which I appreciate. I will slightly, I agree with 90% of what you said. I will slightly disagree.
Okay.
I don't mind getting treated differently than, say, Rolling Stone or Entertainment Weekly, but throw us a bone once in a while. And some publicists, if they don't need you right then, they won't give you anything. But when they need you, oh, you're the best ever. But if they don't need you right then, oh, that's my slight difference. The third option, M. So it sounds like M's answer is, do get mad at the publicist if they kind of forget you in the wings. And I agree with that. But the third option, Em, is don't get mad, but get even in that. Let's draw a metaphor.
Oh, yeah.
Let's say I've got a produce market, right? And I buy flowers from a guy every week, right?
Sure.
And I'm always – and if he's hurting, he's like, oh, John, can you buy some extra mums? Can you buy some extra pansies? I'm like, yeah, bring them on over. I'll sell them at the store, you know? But then if – let's say tomato prices go through the roof. So he doesn't sell tomatoes to me. He sells them to a big box store because they're paying more. And But I've been his loyal customer for 10 years, you know. So the response is, well, listen, if you're not looking out for me, I'm not going to look out for you. And maybe I'll find another supplier, you know. And so the metaphor there is, if PR people, when they got a buzz band, like, oh, we don't have time. When they come back around with some newbie band or whatever, and then maybe they're not that great, they're like, hey, can you cover this? The answer might be like, sorry, don't have time. You know what I mean? And you know, so the point being is, don't get mad. Just, you know, if you want to be, if you want to treat it like a one-way street, then on the other side of the street, the one-way street too. I'm not exactly sure. Like, in the music writing world and in the world in general, you do have to demand respect, you know, in general, or usually anyways. Yeah. And so I do wonder if demanding respect with publication works. PR people works, that is. I don't necessarily have a concrete study where I've basically muscled a PR person into being what I want them to be when they weren't what usually just kind of blows up and they just go away, frankly, you know. So I don't know, Em. I don't know. Anyways, I agree. Get mad at the PR person. And then, you know, if they need a favor, I'm sorry you don't get a favor. But listen, let's talk about some cool news. Henry Rollins recently journeyed to Inner Ear Studio. And of course, as the listeners might know, Inner Ear Studio, about 3 years ago, had to move from its location. I believe moved back to Don Zientar's house. Don Zientar, of course, being the engineer slash producer that runs Inner Ear Studio. And he's run it since the late 70s. And of course, then we just had Howard Wolfling on the podcast, which the listeners haven't heard yet, who recorded at Inner Ear many times and knows it actually used to be in a band with Don Zientara. Anyways, Henry Rollins was back in D.C. with his old pal Ian MacKay at Inner Ear Studio, and which I think is now at Don Zientara's house again. And they worked on a four-track recording, four-song recording, I should say. And Henry says he just finished mixing and mastering it, and there's going to be some kind of physical release of this record, and that's all that we know. M, do you think it's like a new thing that he and Ian did kind of near the end of Inner Ear Studios? Or do you think it's like some SOA thing? Is it a Minor Threat thing? Is it some band that never kind of got a proper release? What do you think this is, M?
That's what I've been trying to figure out, because I think it's definitely new. I don't think it's something that has been like sitting there for like 20 years or anything. But I don't really, the vibe I get is not necessarily music. I'm getting more of like they're doing some sort of a spoken word type deal, you know?
Are you interested in that?
Depends what it is.
I'm not.
Just hard no.
I mean, I'll buy it because I'm a sucker. But I mean, like, if they say, "Oh, we're putting out a spoken word with instrumental backing," I'm like, "That's not that interesting to me." I think, and it's pure speculation, I think it's either SOA demos or maybe SOA live or something. Because actually, so of course, SOA is Henry's band before Black Flag. They put out 1 7-inch on Discord, and I think there's a couple of other tracks on some of the Discord comps. There's a very cool SOA bootleg. It's a 12-inch. It's got a bunch of unreleased and demo material and live material. So that suggests that there are some unreleased SOA tapes. So I think, M, that Henry went back to Inner Ear and they mixed some unreleased SOA session and they're going to release that as a 7-inch. Because as Discord has shown through the recent Minor Threat Archive 7-inch reissue, which was pretty cool, they're kind of digging up. It appears there's not that much in the Discord archive, frankly, but what there is, it appears they're digging up and dusting off and cleaning off and making a nice release. And I think that's what it's going to be. And I am very interested in that.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't know, though. I think it's something new.
And would you care about SOA if Henry had never joined Black Flag? Would you care about SOA, or is the reason people care about SOA just because Henry was in it and then he joined Black Flag? Does the SOA stand on its own, is what I'm saying?
I think it stands on its own up to a point. But I think Henry having been in Black Flag is the thing that pushes it over the edge.
I think SOA is pretty cool. Honestly, I think SOA is as good as Government Issue and, you know, Iron Cross and some of the other bands on those Discord. I mean, I think they're all kind of the same caliber with Minor Threat and Teen Idols and some of the other bands being, you know, the next level up or two levels up. But I'm interested in it. I think it's cool. And you know, Henry's put out some archive stuff before, and I think it's going to be at least interesting. It'll be interesting to see how he puts it out, though, and what his perspective is going to be on it. Well, here's a bummer story. M, no Punk Rock Bowling in 2026. The Stern Brothers
Yay.
released a lengthy message. And I'll just read a couple of lines here. Life threw some unexpected challenges our way over these past several months, and we are living in difficult times. Sadly, it has become clear there will not be a PRB 2026. This is an incredibly tough reality for all of us to face. PRB isn't just a festival, it's a family reunion. It truly breaks our hearts not to be there in 2026. They say they will be there in 2027. And then actually they had an extended statement where they talk about how the political situation in America is real bad right now. And they briefly alluded to some other festivals that maybe are not as punk, that they say they're punk, but they're not as punk mindset as Punk Rock Bowling yet. Of course, well, I think they're sort of alluding to Punk in the Park, which is run by a guy that donated money to the Trump campaign, which is still bizarre. There's a lot to take away from this. First of all, I'm bummed out. Punk Rock Bowling, I mean, I talk about it almost every week on the podcast. It's so much fun. I was really looking for the 2026. I already have my hotel booked. I've got my rental car booked. I've got my No Doubts ticket already paid for. So I'm really, really bummed out. I love Punk Rock Bowling. It is the best music festival for sure. I love it. It's so much fun. So I'm bummed out that's not going to be there. And it's a little concerning that they're not doing it in that presumably Punk Rock Bowling is a money maker, not a money loser, right? So for them to say, "Oh, we're not going to make our biggest annual income this year," that's a statement with a lot of import to it, you know. And you know, they said they got some unexpected things. I don't know if that's personal stuff, not part of Punk Rock Bowling, or if it's kind of ticket sales are down across the board, prices are up across the board. And so maybe, I mean, maybe it's a financial decision, but that's concerning because if it's a financial decision, so you're saying you can't make any money with Punk Rock Bowling, which I can believe. So then does that mean that Punk Rock Bowling is kind of on its last legs and wheezing? And what's doubly frustrating, it seems like Punk in the Park is making a killing, you know? And these huge, and also these huge, terrible, Golden Voice festivals with like 90 bands in like one day are like making a killing as well in Las Vegas and all over the places. So it's kind of interesting that Punk Rock Bowling, in the wake of the success of Punk in the Park, which sort of copied Punk Rock Bowling style and the horrible Golden Voice Fest, that Punk Rock Bowling is the one that's kind of taking a pause. Now we don't know that it's economics on that. It could be anything, you know. But this is a bummer, man. And I'm worried about Punk Rock Bowling. I love Punk Rock Bowling. I think it's great. I think they do almost everything right, and they make money. And they should. But as far as festivals go, price wise, vibe wise, land, I mean, bands wise, venue wise, locale wise, and general feeling wise, it's the best for sure. And so I'm bummed out about this, and I'm concerned. And now my summer plans have totally changed them. Some people, talking about they're going to be throwing some maybe like mini shows or whatever during that. And I mean, I still might go out for No Doubt. But the question is, Em, if I fly out to Vegas and it's not Punk Rock Bowling, will that just be like depressing? Like even if I just go for like 3 days, will that be? But then it's only 3 days. I can hit the record store, see No Doubt, and fly back. Or maybe I'll use that money for Netherlands or Rebellion Fest in UK or going out to LA. Knock on wood, there's a chance, there's a very small chance, maybe 1 out of 5, of a Punk News event in LA this year or maybe the Bay Area. Not this year, next year. So maybe I'll just put the energy into that. But I don't know, but I don't know yet. Anyway, so I'm bummed out. I hope everything's cool with the Stern Brothers. Of course, the listeners might recall it was a before the last year was rock. It was a rocky year for the Stern Brothers because they got in sort of an argument, and for 1 or 2 years, only one Stern Brother booked the thing, and the other Stern Brothers tried to start up that thing in like the Caribbean or whatever it was. Was it called Destination Chaos? Was that what it was called, Em?
Yeah, it was Destination Chaos.
Yeah. So, and that didn't work out. So it's been, you know, I mean, really ever since COVID, because actually Punk Rock Bowling did happen the year after COVID restrictions ended. Then weirdly, there was a pause the next year. Then they did two or three in a row. No, two, like two in a row. Then the Stern Brothers got in a fight or something like that. And then they got back together for the 25th anniversary, and now they're taking a pause again. So it's been a rocky situation since COVID for punk rock bowling. So Em, what do you think is going on? What do you think's happening? How big of an alarm is this?
I think there's a couple things going on. I think because of like the Golden Voice package festivals and stuff, maybe that's driven up the prices for venue rentals and stuff in Vegas.
Indeed. Wow. And I think you hit it on the head, honestly. I think you hit it on the head, but go ahead.
Yeah, because I think that's the biggest thing. I
That
think
sucks,
punk,
doesn't it? That sucks ass.
it sucks. It's not good. It's just like, come on. There's like one, like, just no. It's the this is why we can't have nice things, right? But I think they're gonna look into other places other than Vegas. I think they really want to keep it in Vegas, and I think that's why it's we're gonna see you in 2027, not this year or not next year. So we can make it happen in this city. But I really think they're gonna have to move it for the future of the festival and for the sustainability of it. Again, like I've never been, but every time like you go and like you talk about it and stuff, it sounds just everything's like so perfect, right? Like so perfectly like situated. Like, oh, you have the club shows and they're all within walking distance of like, hotels on different things. And here's where the main festival is. And it's also very like accessible and easy to get to, and everything's very close by. So I think they can find that somewhere else, but I think it's going to take a really long time. So I think that's the main thing that's going on. Whenever there's like such a big cancellation, it always kind of, my mind always goes to like, is everything okay with the people who are running it? Like, is everything okay kind of on the back end? So again, we don't know, but like hopefully everyone's good and healthy and safe. But yeah, it was really surprising, like reading the story like when it was posted and stuff, because it was like, wow, we were like just talking about it and like speculating the lineups and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, it's a real blow, but hopefully it's only like this or next year, and they're gonna figure out where they can host it, and have it be more sustainable.
Yeah, man, it's a we'll have to. I mean, nobody's got any answers.
No.
It's a bummer, man. I don't know. Should I go to Vegas anyways, or should I just cancel? Should I sell my No Doubt tickets and do something else?
Well, like you have the No Doubt tickets.
But I can sell them for a profit, most likely.
I think it's a what would you rather do? Would you rather go and spend like a couple days in Vegas, get to experience the magic of the Sphere, get to see No Doubt, or like you said, like go to a different country and like eat different food and kind of have a different experience altogether?
Maybe I'll do a mini Vegas vacay, like 3 or 4 days as opposed to like 5 or 6. Because I can see that being very depressing, be out in Vegas for 6 days and no punk rock bowling. But like
Yeah.
you go to No Doubt, go to the record stores, maybe just a fun little jaunt, yeah, man, we'll see. Anyways, that's a bummer, man. It's a real bummer. Here's something that's kind of cool. Lip Cream has re-released their entire discography, and it's the first time they've released it in America ever. On Relapse, and actually Relapse is doing this kind of pretty cool box set that's got everything in one box. All the records, a bunch of little extra goodies and some other stuff too. $200, pretty reasonable for like 8 records or something. And Lip Cream is one of these early Japanese hardcore punk bands, along with Gauze, Zao, Geezum, and kind of those early super fast, the Clay. The stop the Stalin, those super fast Japanese hardcore bands. Lip Cream is kind of almost one of the most mysterious bands, because even though not a whole lot of people know about, with Geezum, there's all this like mythos surrounding Sakavi, and Zao, there's mythos because they're satanic or whatever, but not really. Where Gauze, like they're a political band. Where Lip Cream, it's not exactly clear what they are. There's not a whole lot of material about them online. About their actual history. And so they're kind of one of the, even though maybe the band themselves or the lyrics aren't as mysterious as Geezum or Zao, the actual ideas behind the banner a bit more mysterious because it's a bit more confusing. There's translation issues, which is part of the fun of Japanese hardcore. And so anyways, this also continues relapses reissue of a bunch of Japanese hardcore bands. They reissued the first two Gizem records. They reissued the Zao record. I think they did some SHI records, which is Cherry of Zao after Zao. And we'll see what's on the docket. So, Em, is this interesting to you? And do you think there are going to be more Japanese reissues?
I think it's interesting. Again, like I'm not, other than I know they are a Japanese punk band, I'm not very familiar like with the band. So it's always really cool to see punk bands from different like from places that aren't, you know, kind of North America or like the UK. Because it's so hard to keep up on like different scenes if you're not kind of like a part of it in some way. So I always think that's fun and cool. I would like to know more about the band and kind of like solve some of the mysteries, but I don't think that'll ever happen. You know, I think it's just the mystery is the thing. But I do think we're going to start to see a little bit more more reissues, more stuff like that, because it's more people are like diving into things, getting more like getting deeper into stuff, and it's just great to see like a place that has had such an impact on punk music finally kind of be a little bit more recognized for it.
Well said. I think there will be other Japanese reissues from Relapse, so we'll see. The Damned have announced a new album, but the new album's got kind of a twist to it. It's called Not Like Everybody Else. It's out January 23, and it's out by the band directly. And it's a covers album, but it's being kind of built as a tribute to Brian James, the original guitarist who just passed away. The band covers R.D. Taylor, Joe Cocker, The Creation, Iggy and the Stooges, Gimme Danger, Pink Floyd, See Emily Play, The Kinks, The Yardbirds, Lollipop Shop, The Animals, and The Rolling Stones The Last Time, which they've played live a whole bunch of times. Em, are you psyched for this, or is this a little bit underwhelming?
I thought it was going to be new. I thought if they were going to announce something, it was going to be like a full all originals, because it's the first, what, in like 40 years with Rat Scabies on a
Right,
recording.
right.
So it's kind of like, okay, but maybe the covers are just like testing the waters, you know, and they're just like, is this cool? Is this fun? Are we having fun with this? Are we having a good time in the studio recording all together? Do we want to take this to the next step and record co or record originals? You know, kind of stuff like that. So I hope this is the beginning of just getting back all together in a studio environment, but who knows? I do think the covers are going to be fun. Like, I think this is going to be a fun album. But it wouldn't have been on my bingo card, that's for sure.
You know, covers albums are usually underwhelming. I can think of two that aren't underwhelming, or three actually that aren't underwhelming. I can think of the Melvins' "Everybody Loves Sausage," which is amazing. Slayer's "Undisputed Attitude," which is amazing, and Alice Cooper's first Hollywood Vampires record, all of which are great covers albums. But usually, cover albums you're like, eh, you know. The track list here is, I guess, it's like the what's interesting about well, not one of the things that's interesting about the Damned is. They so don't care about being punk, which is as punk as it gets, you know. But what that means is they usually just play like psychedelic songs, you know, and like pop, 60s pop songs, which frankly isn't always super interesting. Like the last couple Damned albums have been all right, but they haven't really blown me away. You know, it's like, oh, it's the Damned kind of sort of being power pop, sort of being early Pink Floyd, which I love, but not often going all the way, you know. You know, the track listing here, it's a lot of 60s AM gold stuff, aside from the Stooges, of course, the Rolling Stones and Pink Floyd. I think it'll be all I think it'll be all right, but I think it's nice to do a tribute to Brian James. I'm not sure if this was originally intended as a tribute to Brian James, or do you think they just kind of stuck that on ex post facto?
I don't think it was originally, but
Like
given the track list, maybe.
unless these are like Brian James' favorite songs, then I think it's ex post facto.
Yeah.
But you're right in that, like, the first record back with Rat Sky Buddies, I kind of would have liked like a powerhouse, even like a 25-minute powerhouse of an album where they just rip through Machine Gun Etiquette style, with Rat Sky
Yeah.
Buddies. This is, and I guess it's kind of cool that the Damned are always doing something new. But even though they're doing something new, they don't always do something bold. Like, the last couple of records haven't been very bold. That being, and actually, though, I went to buy it online, and what's kind of cool is they're putting out three surprise 7-inch singles where they're not saying what's on the B side. I wanted to buy
Oh.
it, and the record and the singles all together was like $200 after shipping. And I'm like, oof. But that's part of the tax because of tariffs too, which sucks ass. Which I think there's not supposed to be tariffs on records, but sometimes there is anyways. So anyways, I don't know, man. I'll probably get it. It looks interesting. And actually, I gotta get it because I just got one of the most rarest damned albums there is. I got I'm All Right, Jack and the Beanstalk original press, and now I gotta complete my collection. And the only two I don't have is was like Bad Time for Heroes or whatever that record is, and this one right here. So I guess I gotta get them. Anyways, the damned are cool. I'll always go see them live. I love them. I think in a live context, and some of these songs actually could be mind blowing. Like the Pink Floyd, the Iggy and the Stooges, even like the Lollipop Shop, She Must You Must Be a Witch. Live, that would be actually kind of cool in the middle of a damn set, but I
True.
think on record, this might not be a real destroy. Like, what I want to destroy a record with Rat Scabies on the Skins. This is, I mean, with like Summer in the City and Making Time. That's all kind of hippy dippy or AM pop, and so, or even Heart Full of Soul, which has been covered way too many times anyways. It's not going to be a destroyer of a song. It's going to be an okay, kind of nice to listen to song. And I want to destroy a record with Rat Scabies, and that's not what this is going to be. So anyways, but on the other hand, Dan, at least the Damned are still doing stuff, and at least we still get to enjoy the Damned. So there you go. But listen, that pales in
Yes.
comparison to this one, man. In 2023, as the listeners certainly know, Justin Sane of Anti-Flag was accused by multiple women, many women actually, of sexual assault. He was sued by one of the victims. At first, the other band members supported Justin Sane, and they were like, "We know Justin, he wouldn't do this." And then as the accusations mounted, they were like, "Oh, I guess he did. He's a bad guy. We don't like him." There was a default judgment against Justin Sane, who never answered the complaint against from the victim. And it's unclear if the victim is or is not able to enforce a judgment against him and get some money out of him. So
Right.
basically, for the past 2 years or so, all the other members have been totally quiet. They haven't said anything. Just kind of, I mean, out of the blue, bassist Chris number two did issue a statement. And I'm going to read the entire statement. "I want to acknowledge the harm my former bandmate caused, and I'm truly sorry that our response to it did not center the need of survivors. I'm grateful that this person's true nature was exposed, and I recognize the importance of accountability, something he has not yet taken for himself. I recognize that our initial public statement caused harm and disappointment, and I deeply regret the pain we contributed to." I don't know who wrote this, but their grammar is terrible.
Oh, it's awful.
I regret not recognizing the warning signs of his depravity and wish I had been more aware of the ways in which my privilege contributed to a false sense of safety around him. Regardless of intentions, harm was caused, and I am sorry. I am sorry for the pain and betrayal experienced by survivors and support them in demanding justice and healing. I respect their courage for sharing the truth." And that's the full statement. And what's your reaction to this? And some people think he's going to start trying to do music again, or I mean, the question is, why now, 2 years afterwards? Is this statement even
Yeah.
necessary? Is it appropriate? Is it well written? And why is he putting this out now? What's your take, Em?
The statement is not well written. It is very kind of clunky. And it makes me wonder who actually wrote it and why, and if a person actually wrote it.
Oh, you think AI wrote it?
I don't know.
It
Because
kind of reads
like
that way. It
just
reads in a weird fashion. You're right.
Because of like the grammar choices, you know, because like stuff that's been through AI either has like real, like it's just really stilted and weird. And it's like that shouldn't go there. That should go over here. So maybe, but I don't know. This just, rubs me the wrong way. I think the only reason why it's coming out now is like, okay, people have had time to kind of digest and process, I guess, everything that's gone on. And I think the remaining band members feel guilty that they didn't say anything and they didn't really they didn't they just kind of everything was so abrupt. It was just okay, yep, we're done, that's it, the end. And I feel like now they're like, oh, we actually now know what was going on. Maybe they've talked to the people who were affected, they've talked to the survivors if we want to believe the statement. And they're moving forward to try to make reparations. So maybe that's it. Maybe they're just like, oh, you know, now we can come out and say this, and we've taken the time to talk and listen and learn. And again, like that's best case scenario, and hopefully that's what they've done. But it just feels something doesn't feel right about it. Like something just feels very disingenuous.
Well,
And I
oh, go ahead,
yeah.
sorry.
And like I hope I'm wrong, and I hope that, you know, that's what they're actually doing, and they're actually doing what they said, and they're trying to like mend things and, you know, whatever. But I don't know. I don't know. Just something about it rubs me the wrong way. What are you gonna say?
Well, what I'll say is that first of all, like it almost feels like he's just pulling buzzwords out, like I have to
Yeah.
recognize my privilege. I don't know what that has to do with this situation. You know what I mean? Like I don't know how privilege comes into play here.
I guess just being a man in the punk scene because you never have to think about it. Maybe.
I mean, maybe there is, I agree that there's logic there, but I think that's such a minimal point as to the bigger issue at hand, you know.
100%.
So I feel like he's just kind of pulling, and maybe yeah, I did read it. I have no idea. Anyways, here's my take on this. I'm not sure that they really. I'm not. I mean, so, and the answer is I'm not. I'm saying we don't know, but I mean, I wonder if. See, here's the thing: if he knew Justin Sang was being creepy, he had a duty to do something. Right, he
Hundred
should have done
percent.
something, right?
Oh,
And if he
100
knew Justin was
percent.
being creepy, then that initial statement was bullshit, and
Yep.
that's and then the statement is bullshit as well, you know. But a band like Anti-Flag, which is a large, medium-sized band, everyone thinks that people in bands, they're all best friends. The fact of the matter is, at this level, at the Anti-Flag's at, a lot of those guys haven't been friends for years, and the only time they see each other is on stage and maybe at rehearsals. And they talk like
Yep.
once a year on email to set up tours, and like that's it. And they're not friends, and they don't hang out, you know. So it's entirely possible that they didn't know about any of Justin Sane's creepy behavior, you know. And in which case, the initial defense they didn't know about it is I actually don't blame them because, you know, I would not want like friends look out for their friends. As long as it's appropriate. So just because someone accuses you of something doesn't mean you're guilty, you know? And so it's your
Yeah.
friends that can support you, you know? And
Of
so
course.
if they really didn't know anything, I think their initial response was valid. And then once the evidence did mount and it turned out that Justin Sane was a creep, I think their secondary statement was valid as well. It's like we really didn't think he was a creep. I mean, it could have been worded better, probably, you know. But we didn't think he was a creep. But there's a lot of evidence showing he is a creep, so he's a creep, you know. I wouldn't fault someone for sticking up for their friends or looking out for their friends until evidence makes you not able to do that otherwise, you know. But if that's the case, then I think this statement is
Yeah.
not necessary. I if they really didn't know anything, then I don't think he's liable or responsible for anything. I mean, you're not like. If you work at a store and someone at a store does something bad, are you responsible for that other person doing something? No, you know,
No.
everyone's responsible for themselves. So the fact that he's putting the statement out and makes me think that he did know something to begin with, you know,
Yeah.
unless he's really just trying to navigate back into the music world and he thinks this is the way to do it, you know. But if they really know anything, I think the better position would be like, we didn't know he was doing anything. That was whack. He's bullshit and he sucks. And that's that. You don't like you shouldn't apologize if you didn't you should apologize for things you haven't done. you see. And so if he didn't know anything, then why is he apologizing here? You know, and if that's what he's doing, if he's apologizing and he didn't really know anything, that's a terrible strategy and it's blowing up in his face. If he did know something, then this apology is way too little, way too late, you know. So either way, to me, it's a bad statement. I just will never know. I wonder how much he really did know. I think they might not have known anything, although maybe there were inklings, though. Maybe it's not as clean as that. Maybe they didn't know anything, but there were inklings. You know how there can be like inklings? You know what I mean, Em?
Like you suspect something,
You
but like
like
usually if you have that inkling, you find out one way or
true.
another. Like you talk to the per you don't talk to necessarily the person that you have the inkling about, but you talk to people who like maybe, are their current partner or their ex-partner or something like that, right? Like you kind of get a little bit of
Yeah, I mean
background.
it could be so like you know, say Anti-Flag's hanging out or whatever, and like you would think like one guy would say the guy like, yo, Justin's like 42. Why is he always hanging out with like 18-year-old girls? You know what? Like that's like an inkling. You know what I mean? Like you know what I mean? But so I mean, we'll never know. I wonder if there was inklings or not. And anyway, I think this statement is poorly played and written in a very odd fashion. And maybe he's testing the waters to see if he can put out music again. Which, if he didn't know anything, I think he should be able to. But if he did know something, then well, listen, man. You were not cool. So,
I agree completely.
yeah, man. Let's see what else we got here. Oh, here's something cool though. Ken Casey of Dropkick Murphys has launched an anti-Trump campaign. Really, he's joining up with this organization called Home of the Brave, and it's a nonprofit founded by four Republicans with a focus on highlighting negative impacts of Trump actions. So basically, Ken Casey he did like a promo video, and I gotta say, man. A lot of punk bands, and especially big medium ones, are shut. They're not saying anything. You know what I mean? I'm thinking of some examples here, like Social Distortion. He's not saying anything. You know? Let me look at the old Punk Rock Bowling, so I can name some names. Punk Rock Bowling was like 2024. Let's see here. I'm so sad about Punk Rock Bowling, M. You know? Gogo Bordello is not saying anything, M. You know? Let's see who else here. Chats aren't saying anything. Even like Gorilla Biscuits and Quicksand are being kind of vague, you know. Power
Chats
Trip. Not,
are Australian, though.
well, they can still speak up about it, you know. But
That's fair.
they are Australian. Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, I'll give you that one. Anyways, a lot of bands are shutting up. And the fact of the matter is Dropkick Murphys fan base is more likely to be kind of blue collar and maybe leaning towards the Trump side than other bands. And I think it's rad as hell that Ken Casey is speaking up when it counts. Now it's time that it counts. I think it's rad and I think this is cool. And I wish Ken Casey all the best in this endeavor. I think now's the time to step up to the plate. And Dropkick Murphys are stepping up to the plate. You got to give them the credit, Em. You got to.
Oh, 100%. It's so good to see like people actually like taking a stand, you know? 'Cause it's like exactly how are so many like bands and stuff not just being like, "Yep, Trump fucking sucks. This is awful. We're living in like a fascist state." You know what I mean? And that's like, "Here we go. We're gonna talk about this." Good. You should be. I think it's great. Good for Ken Casey, good for Dropkick Murphys.
Yeah, man, Dropkick Murphys is getting cooler and cooler like every month, man.
They
You know,
really are.
on Punk News, anytime we post anything political, it's like it gets way more interaction to other stuff.
Oh
Someone
my God,
said,
yeah.
"Who can? Who? I mean, most people are very supportive of this on Instagram." Someone said on our Instagram, "Who cares? Single-handedly ruining the band with his BS." First of all, have you ever listened to Dropkick Murphys? All the stuff is about working. They got songs about unions for God's sake. Like, what are you listening to? Like, what are you listening to? Where you think? Not that Dropkick Murphys is crass, but
No.
Dropkick Murphys is somewhat political. Their songs definitely have a political bend. Like, what are you listening to where you're surprised by this? Anyway, I'll even say his name. TJ's, this knucklehead says, "Who cares single-handedly ruining the band with his BS? We just here for the music, bro, not your opinion." Well, I am here for Ken's opinion because it's punk rock. So that's a dumbass thing to
Yeah.
say.
And
And
it's also in the music.
yeah,
Sorry.
right, exactly. And a lot of people kind of said just that, anyways. And some guy said, "This is, yeah, since when is punk about expressing opinions? Stay in line, Ken. Lick the boots of the super cool guy." Anyways, so anyway, you know, so anyways, people are knuckleheads. Anyways, so this is real cool. Good on Ken for doing that. Let's
Oh
see
yeah.
here. All right, so we got two more quick stories. M, tell people about Vile, right? Isn't Vile like one of your favorite bands?
Vile are definitely up there, yes. They are one of the they're a very exciting newish band that I really enjoy. So they have released a new song. It is called Idle Hands. It's a little heavier. Like everything they've been releasing has gone in a more kind of like heavier like tone direction. So this it has more of that. Like, and they do the cool thing where it's here's some like very sparse instrumentation, and then here's like some very some more like layer instrumentation and stuff. So I like the back and forth between it. It's very interesting to listen to. I like the vibe of the song. I'm excited to hear what they have in the future as well. So everything that they release, they're just kind of building their sound and expanding it kind of one way or another. And it's really nice to see bands do that. And it's also really nice to have like a nice meaty tone, you know? I like a good meaty tone.
There you go. M likes the meaty tones. Sounds like a band, the meaty tones. So let's see. Let's do one more story. This is so Ice Cube has released a remix of a song called Before Hip Hop, but it's called the Premix, which I guess is just a joke because it's before hip hop. I don't think it's an actual
Oh,
premix,
sure.
which never works. So it's Ice Cube, LL Cool J, and Chuck D. And I'll give you first reaction to this song. What do you think of this song?
I listen to it and I'm like, I'm positive we've talked about this in some way before
Have
because
we?
it's I don't think we have because like it just came out, but like it just sounds so familiar. So I was trying to figure out like, have I heard this somewhere? Was this on like an award show or something when they were doing the 50th anniversary of hip hop? Was this part of that somehow? I don't know. It just struck me as very, very, very familiar.
Did you like the song?
It was okay. There were certain things that felt really disjointed. This is something that I don't think you need featured artists on because I felt like LL Cool J's verse was very disjointed. I felt like Chuck D's fit in a little bit better, but I felt like if it was just Ice Cube and it was maybe 3 minutes, it would have got the point home a little bit stronger.
I
Yes.
did not like this song. I am or was a huge Ice Cube fan. I am or was a huge Public Enemy fan. And Ice Cube, LL Cool J, people kind of forget that LL Cool J, LL Cool J is an actor now, and he has some like I guess lovers tunes, but LL Cool J in like 83 was like the hardest rapper, one of the hardest rappers. He's a little bit older school than people think he is, and he was kind of like a real street cat. There's kind of two or three main reasons why I didn't really like this song. A, the beat is okay, but like ever since the end of sampling and I guess the beginning of computer generated beats, Ice Cube's flow has not been as impactful, and the music is not that like the music just isn't that interesting. It's kind of a little too slow. But the real main reason I didn't really like this song is I have no idea what it's about. Like they're like before hip hop, and they just name things, and like, but then are you saying like they're like before hip hop, and they start singing about racism, or like before hip hop, they talk about like inequality? Did hip hop solve those things? Like I don't like what is this song about?
I think it's 'cause like a lot of people blame hip hop for the things
Is
that they're
that what it
saying. This
is?
happened before hip hop too. Like people were like dying in the streets before hip hop. Hip hop didn't cause this to happen. That's how I took it.
Maybe, I mean, you might be right, but to me it's very confusing, frankly. And I think the impact of this, like Ice Cube, you have the most impactful songs, songs like America's Most Wanted, Today Was a Good Day, Dead Homies, Check Yourself Before You Wreck Yourself. Tales from the Dark Side, Endangered Species. Ice Cube had some of the most political impactful songs there was. And now, like, his flow is not that great. And it's like, I'm not exactly sure what he's talking about. And he often talks in coded language. And the reason he talks in coded language, because he really, you know, within the past 5 years or so, he's really come out with some pretty whack stuff. I mean, he put out the pretty good album. Was it called? I always call it Arrest the President, but that's not the name of the record. He put out that record that was all about how much he hates Donald Trump, which I thought was kind of
Oh,
cool.
yeah.
And then he went full on pro-Trump, which was bizarre. It's like, you're Ice Cube, dude. Like, what? You know, and then after that didn't work out for him, he like acted like he didn't do that, even though he did. And then he put out that album called, well, then he put out that really bad album with Snoop Dogg, E-40, and who was Too Short, which had potential, and it was just a terrible album. And he put it out as what do you call it? What do you call them? M Bitcoins? What do you call those? The NFTs,
FTs, yeah.
which was bad. And then he put out that album called Man Down, which I think is
Oh,
pretty much.
that was terrible.
I feel like I don't feel like it's an anti-LGBTA album. Like,
Yeah.
even if he's not down with that, it's like, and I always say this with homophobic people, whatever. It's like, why are you thinking about gay people so much? Like, if you don't like them, why are you always thinking about them? You know what I mean? And you want to record an entire album about that? Of all the things you could record an album about, that's what you want to record an album about and spend months working on? Seems weird. Anyways, so you know, really, you know, he used to be maybe even at times my favorite MC, but now he's maybe not even top five. I mean, like those early albums are amazing. I was listening to NWA not that long ago, and I'm like, wow, NWA really was great. Even though everyone always says that NWA was great, but man, like Ice Cube has probably fallen off more than any other rapper, I think. You know, his
Yeah.
newer albums, some are okay, some are just straight up bad. The Man Down was bad. This is not terrible, but it's confused and muddled, you know. And when you've got such a powerful crew, I feel like now's the time to really blow it out of the water. And it's a kind of a swing and a miss, or a bunt at best. And so I don't think Ice Cube's ever going to regain his status. He's always going to get respect because of his incredible contributions to hip hop and music, but he's just sadly, unlike Penny Rimbo, who's still the real friggin' deal. Or unlike KRS-One, who's still KRS-One, or unlike Jello, who's still Jello, Ice Cube is in this weird conspiracy zone where he won't even really say what he means, and he'll only like dog whistle it. Which, just come out and say it, dude. Like, at least have the guts to do that. But he doesn't, you know. And so I don't know. Ice Cube's been very disappointing the past 5 or 6 or 7 years, and this track, it's not a disgrace, but it doesn't undo the loss of ground that I think he's suffered the past 5 or 6 years, frankly.
Yeah. Do you think he'll ever like come back?
Do I think he'll ever come back? In what context?
To kind of how he was? Like, do you think that's an option, or do you think it's just that's it now forever?
Well, Ice Cube used to be very political, and he was street political, whereas Public Enemy was kind of the academic political, you know,
Yeah.
and KRS was maybe the spiritual political. Ice Cube was the street political, and in a way, that's why he was, you know, kind of one of the most enjoyable, most fun rappers. You know, the album he put out after Trump was political, but it was about how much, you know, he loves Trump, which was whack, you know. And the fact of the matter is, no, I don't think he's ever going to come back for a couple of reasons. First of all, I just don't think he's got lots of money from his movies, many of which are good. I don't think he's got the fire in his belly. You know, his raps these days sound like they're kind of first drafts, frankly. And I think he maybe even has maybe lost the mojo a little bit. I think if he really worked, he could come up with some real banging tracks, but I think he just doesn't want to put in the work. I think the beats that he gets are not that great, and unlike some rappers that can overcome a mediocre beat, give KRS-One any beat, even if it's whack, he's still gonna make at least a good song because he's KRS. Ice Cube needs a kicking beat, and his beats are not that kicking. I mean, I think maybe because he wants to rap slower, which I think is not a attribute for him, frankly. And so, no, I don't think he's ever gonna be a huge. I think he's just gonna keep putting out kind of these low key albums that don't really make a mark, and maybe he money and not put him out anymore because I don't really make any money. And he'll just make. I mean, I didn't even know this. He put out a War of the Worlds movie that apparently got like the worst reviews ever. I didn't even know it came out. And so I think he'll just keep making movies or whatever, or just relax and enjoy his money, which maybe he's better off just enjoying his money than instead of ruining his legacy further. So yeah, no, I
Yeah.
don't think he's ever gonna come. I think the era of Ice Cube is over, frankly. And to a degree, maybe that speaks to wider hip hop. I need not digress, and but you know, a lot of mainstream hip hop right now is very disappointing to me in that it's not addressing topics that I like hip hop to address. And I think it's honestly, I think a lot of modern hip hop is very much controlled by the major label and is almost kind of, what's the word I'm looking for, making characters of these people and thereby
Oh.
robbing them of any true statement. Not all of it, but a lot of it, you know, where I think,
Yeah.
you know, but then again, that's because I'm used to 80s and early 90s hip hop, which is my favorite. And so I want every hip hop to sound like that. But on the other hand, Run the Jewels, which was an homage to late 80s hip hop, was a huge breakthrough, you know, so maybe people do want that. Anyway, but then again, Run the Jewels didn't sell nearly as much as Fetty Wap or that horrible guy extension, or even that horrible guy. Who was the guy with colored hair that was like a real piece of work? He's like a young guy that wanted to be a gangster.
Takashi 69.
Like he
Yeah.
sold way more than Run the Jewels, and Run the Jewels is way better than Tekashi 6ix9ine. So, anyways,
He's in jail.
I think he got out actually, isn't he? Or is he still in
Oh,
jail? I
I
think
thought he
he's
was
out
still
now.
in jail.
He didn't get that long.
But it was like a child thing.
It's sex with a minor or something like. He raped a minor,
Yeah.
rather.
Oh.
He's just an idiot. He's a creep.
Anyways.
Anyways.
Not punk.
Not punk. So, no, actually, he's out of jail, but he's been arrested a whole bunch of times. Anyways, what an asshole. Anyway, so yeah, I don't think Ice Cube's ever going to regain. I wish he would, but I don't think he's going to. Actually, honestly, he's blown a lot of cool opportunities. Ice Cube, Snoop Dogg, E-40, and Too Short. Could be great. Was not. Ice Cube, LL Cool J, and Chuck D. Could be great. Was not. So there you go. You know. So yeah. And anything else you want to cover on tonight's episode?
Breaking news, Morrissey has canceled this month's South American tour.
Oh, what? How come?
He canceled two Mexico shows in Mexico last minute last week due to, and I quote, extreme exhaustion. And now the rest of his shows are canceled. They were going to be in Brazil, Colombia, you know, stuff like that. And they all cite extreme exhaustion.
That seems suspicious, you know. Usually it's like
Yeah.
production issues or whatever. You know, they say production issues, and you're like, what production issues is that? You're like, well, like, what could can't, you know? You're not Kiss or, you know, Mariah Carey with a huge stage show. You just get up there and sing in front of a video screen. That is suspicious, Em. What do you think is going on, Em?
I think he just doesn't want to do it.
I don't, you know, and we contemplated the issues of mental health issues, you know,
We
before.
did.
Maybe that's the issue, you know.
Yeah, it could be. I know, like, some people get to, well, everyone can get it at different points, but like, something that you real. Oh, well, there's also the thing. Before I say that, but there's also the thing where he had the death threat in North America. So maybe he's just like that took a big toll, and now I just need to not be a part of this right now. And that could be the show's giving him more anxiety, more stress, stuff like that.
Canceling a tour is a big deal because there's a lot of lost money there and a lot of paperwork to go through, you know.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that he canceled Mexico's because Morrissey is huge in Mexico. Absolutely huge. So yeah, well, I'm not surprised though. I saw him, he was awesome not that long ago, but you know, he cancels shows a lot, so we'll see. Well,
Who
there you go.
knows? Let's see. What else is like new and exciting? Frankenstein movie's really good. Everyone should go see the Frankenstein movie.
I don't even know what that is.
Guillermo del Toro adapted Frankenstein. It just came out. It's really good.
Is it Frankenstein the book or Frankenstein the Green Monster with bolts in his neck?
The book.
Oh, interesting. So he's smart.
Yeah. You're very smart. And I think everything's practical effects, or is a majority of it's practical
Oh,
effects.
I'm all
Oh,
about
it's
that.
great.
If listeners haven't read Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, there's actually two versions. The first version is better. It's not what you might, if you haven't actually read the Frankenstein book, it's not what you think it is at all.
No, it's really good. It's really, really good.
So there you go. Anyways, we'll see you all when M.
Next week with guests.
Oh, what guests, M? Let them know.
Next week we have Deal Breaker on from Ontario.
And if you're not there, that's
exciting.
A deal breaker.